Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 11, entitled Summary Description of the Mahapurush, text number 6 to 8. Etadvai Paurusham Rupam,
Etadvai Paurusham Rupam,
Bhupadau Deo Shironabha,
Bhupadau
Nabi Suryo Akshini Nase Vayu Karnao Disha Prabho Prajapati Prajananam Apano Mrityur Ishituhu Tad Bahavo Lokapala Manas Chandro Bhruvo Yamaha. Text number 8. Lajotaro Adharo Lobho Danta Jyotsna Smayo Brahmaha Romani Bhuruha Bhumno Megha Purusha Murdhajaha. So word to word. Etat. This. Why? Indeed. Paurusham. Of the Virat Purusha. Rupam. The form. Bhu. The earth. Padau. His feet. Deo. Heaven. Shiraha. His head. Nabha, the sky. Nabhi, his navel. Suryaha, the sun. Akshini, his eyes. Nase, his nostrils. Vayuhu, the air. Karnau, his ears. Dishaha, the directions. Prabho, of the Supreme Lord. Prajapati, the demigod of procreation. Prajananam, his genital. Apanaha, his anus. Mrityu, death. Ishitu, of the absolute controller. Tat Bahavaha, his many arms. Lokapalaha, the presiding demigods of the various planets. Manaha, his mind. Chandraha, the moon. Bhruvau, his eyebrows. Yamaha, god of death. Lajja, shame. Uttaraha, his upper lip. Adhara, his lower lip. Lobha, greed. Dantaha, his teeth. Jyotsna, the light of the moon. Smayaha, his smile. Brahmaha, delusion. Romani, the hairs of the body. Bhuruha, the trees. Bhumnaha, of the Almighty Lord. Megha, the clouds. Purusha, of the Virat Purush. Murdha Jaha, the hairs upon the head. Translation by the servants of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. This is the representation of the Supreme Lord as a universal person, in which the earth is his feet, the sky his navel, the sun his eyes, the wind his nostrils, the demigod of procreation his genitals, death his anus, and the moon his mind. The heavenly planets are his head, the directions his ears, and the demigods protecting the various planets his many arms. The god of death is his eyebrows, shame his lower lip, greed his upper lip, delusion his smile, and moonshine his teeth. While the trees are the Almighty Purusha's bodily hairs, and the clouds the hair on his head. Purport. Various aspects of material creation, such as the earth, the sun, and the trees, are sustained by various limbs of the universal body of the Lord. Thus, they are considered non-different from Him, as described in this verse, which is meant for meditation. ओम अज्ञानातिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानंजनाशलाकेय चक्षुरुन्मीलितेन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः. I was born in the darkest of ignorance and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. Thus I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, in this verse we can see, this verse is describing about the universal form of the Lord. As we have just heard how that the entire universe, the different parts of the universe are considered to be different parts of the body of the Supreme Lord. And here in the purport it is mentioned that this verse is actually meant for meditation. So we find that description of the universal form of the Lord throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. Throughout the different cantos we come across the universal form of the Lord. And also in the Bhagavad Gita chapter number 11 is all about the universal form of the Lord. So, but actually, Vaishnavas or devotees do not accept this process of meditation on the universal form of the Lord. The universal form of the Lord is for meditation for those who are on a very crude stage or in the bodily concept of life, who cannot conceive of the personal form of the Lord, or who are less advanced. So this process is for people who cannot conceive of the personal form of the Lord. So we see that sometimes people, due to lack of piety, intelligence, or even envy out of the Lord, they cannot comprehend the personal form. So it is said that in order to understand Krishna, one needs devotional piety. So without that piety, it is very difficult to approach and serve the Lord with determination. And that piety comes from rendering devotional service in the past, knowingly or unknowingly. So that gives the taste or attraction towards devotional service, which leads to more service, and then therefore the taste or attraction thickens, and then we develop more taste like that. But for those who don't have the piety, it is sometimes very difficult to understand the personal form of the Lord. Or sometimes many people are actually very envious of the personal form of Krishna. Therefore they don't want to accept it. So sometimes you might be talking to people and you might give them all evidence from the Shastras. You might describe Krishna's opulences and his glories. The energies, everything is Krishna's energy, it's coming from him, Krishna is the source of it, he's Satchidananda, he has six opulences, he has performed so many kinds of pastimes, very glorious pastimes, which are very extraordinary and uncommon. And so many of the previous Acharyas, great, great devotees, have accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the two-armed form of Krishna, Shyam Sundar playing the flute, dressed in yellow garments, with the peacock feather on his head, and standing in a threefold bending form. So this is the beautiful form of Krishna. But I was reading in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the second canto, Prabhupada writes in the purport that some people are revolted by the personal form of Krishna. So it's a very strong statement. Some people are actually revolted. So, and we also see Shishupal, he was actually revolted by Krishna, right from his very childhood. He was blaspheming Krishna, very, very envious of Krishna. So to such a severe extent, he was blaspheming. So when we preach to people or come across people, or even within us, this envy might be there and cannot accept the personal form of the Lord. So many people immediately reject it. You might tell them everything about Krishna. It all makes sense, but no, I cannot, Krishna can't be the supreme. We'll worship all the demigods. Everyone is supreme. I am supreme. So this is actually coming out of envy, and therefore, and due to lack of knowledge of Krishna, avajananti mamula manushim tarnim ashatam, they cannot appreciate this form of the Lord. So for such kind of people, Krishna is very, very compassionate and merciful. So Krishna has actually cast a very wide net in which he is trying to get everyone to become a devotee, somehow or the other. Somehow or the other, we just got to push them to the finish line. So because people are, it is described for those who are entrenched in the bodily concept of life, for them this method of meditation on the universal form is recommended. So for people who are thinking in terms of material consciousness, like we see sometimes some people appreciate nature, they'll appreciate the mountains, the landscape, the sun, or the different varieties of material manifestation which are quite extraordinary, they'll appreciate them and they'll say that, wow, this is God's creation. So in this way, because they are connecting the energies to the source, they make some advancement, though it's slow. Or also sometimes we see in many tribal and aboriginal cultures, they actually worship some manifestations of the universe. Like some aborigines will worship the sun, or they might worship the thunderbolt or the moon. In this way they are actually they have some idea, in a very crude way, about that the cosmic manifestation, the universe, is God, or it's a manifestation of God. So in this way they are we can see some remnants of this form of meditation on the universal form. But the whole idea is to encourage people to understand that material nature is not independent, but it actually has a source. And there is God behind it. And we also see Srila Prabhupada in many of his conversations with prominent people. He just tries to establish this very basic point that if there is a rose there, and rose is such a beautiful flower, there has to be, somebody has to be the artist. It's not just independent. It is just out of nowhere a rose appeared, or these beautiful flowers. You can go for a flower show, and there's so many beautiful flowers. If a person has some level of piety, he'll actually think that so many beautiful flowers, there has to be a supreme artist behind that. These flowers are not just, did not just come out of random, out of chance or an explosion. So this is just the very basics and the very beginning. So, but we should also understand that Krishna is not the universal form. So here in this verse, it's described that how the earth is his feet, the sky his navel, the sun his eyes, the wind his nostrils. In fact, in the second canto, the 14 planetary systems are the different limbs of the Supreme Lord. So the hellish planets start from the feet and gradually rising up till his head is like the heavenly planets, or the planet of Brahma Loka. And the sun and moon are his eyes. In this way, this is Krishna appearing as a universal form, but it is not Krishna. This point should be understood. It's just like, for example, when in my student days, I used to do pizza delivery on a motorbike. So, and I would go around from Pizza Hut, take all the pizzas, give all the orders, and just run around full speed, and to make sure the pizzas don't get cold, because it's on a motorbike, so they'll go cold. So go full speed and knock on people's door, and they say, "Oh, the pizza boy is here. The pizza man is here. No, we need to give the pizza man some money, so get the credit card or cash." So they were thinking of me as a pizza man, though I'm just not a pizza man. I have my own life. I'm a person. I'm just not a pizza man. That's just like my, it's like a form. So in the same way, Krishna accepts the universal form, but he is not the universal form. So maybe in this way we can try to understand the meditation on the universal form. It is not Krishna. But for people who are in a very crude stage of life, who are entrenched in the bodily existence, and who are, or some who are revolted by Krishna's personal form. So Krishna is very merciful. He actually says, okay, you can meditate on my universal form. And the whole process is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially in Canto 2. So what's the purpose in revealing Krishna? Krishna is revealing the universal form, as described in the Gita, that it is to set the criterion of who is God. So we are in the age of Kali. Every hour, so many false incarnations are popping up all over the planet, especially in India. And recently, one of the incarnations of Krishna died. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about. He died in hospital and he was on the life support ventilator system. But he died. So in this day and age, I won't say names. Some people can get offended, and this goes all over the planet. So, but I'm sure you can figure it out. So the term God has become a very cheap thing in this day and age. Anyone and everyone, they just claim themselves to be God, just because they can perform some vibhutis, manifest some vibhutis or, you know, opulences. So Krishna's vibhutis are very extraordinary. Krishna says, of mountains I'm Mount Meru, of the fish I'm the shark. In this way, you know, of immovable objects I'm the Himalayas. So Krishna's vibhutis are very opulent. Here, the vibhutis they produce is maybe a gold watch or or a gold stone, you know. And they're actually, basically, they're magical performances. And people are fooled by that. Even a magician can perform all those kinds of tricks. So the point is, incarnations has become a very cheap thing. And if so, Arjun asked this not on his behalf. He wanted to see the universal form so that Krishna can set the criterion for so-called incarnations in the future. So if somebody says, I'm an incarnation, we can say then, okay, if you are an incarnation of God, or Krishna, then maybe you can show me your universal form. So in this way, they can be defeated very easily. So, and Srila Prabhupada says that the Virat Rupa is a challenge to the atheists and it is a favor to the asuras. So the Virat Rupa form of the Lord. It's a challenge to the atheists because they cannot manifest it. And it's a favor to them because they will make some advancement if they meditate on the universal form. So Krishna is doing two things simultaneously. It's a challenge to the atheistic class of men. And at the same time, it's a favor to them. So as I said before, this is an aspect of Krishna's mercy in which Krishna casts a very wide net to reclaim all kinds of fallen souls. So those, and even we find that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where the Panchatattva, they plunder the storehouse of love of Godhead and they're distributing it freely. But then it is said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was thinking to himself, there are some kind of people who are actually escaping from my net. And he says, the impersonalists, fruity workers, false logicians, blasphemers, non-devotees and lowest among the student community are very expert in avoiding the Krishna consciousness movement. And therefore the inundation of Krishna consciousness cannot touch them. So in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was considering how some classes of people were somehow avoiding him, avoiding the inundation of the love of Godhead. And then he says, seeing that the Mayavadis and others were fleeing, Lord Chaitanya thought, I wanted everyone to be immersed in this inundation of love of Godhead, but some of them have escaped, therefore I shall devise a trick to drown them also. So, and then, thus the Lord accepted the sannyas order of life after full consideration. So here we can see how the Supreme Lord is very, very merciful. Somehow these classes of people were able to escape his net. And then he's thinking, how can I make them devotees somehow or the other? So though Krishna is beyond the varnashram system, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is beyond the four varnas and the four ashramas, but he accepted the sannyas order of life. So we know before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a householder. externally speaking. And even today, people take sannyasis more seriously. Even we see, even in our community, when sannyasis come, everyone takes them quite seriously. People are bowing down. Everyone, all the devotees want to listen, arranging so many programs. So they're taken very seriously. And especially 500 years ago, that time, somehow these people were not, didn't want to listen from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he's a householder. So he took sannyas from Keshava Bharati. And then they will start bowing down to him and they listen to him. And in this way we can actually see that how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu devised a trick to drown them also in the mercy. And then it goes on, thus the students, infidels, fruitive workers and critics all came to surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya excused them all and they merged into the ocean of devotional service, for no one can escape the unique loving network of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in order to deliver all the fallen souls. Therefore, he devised many methods to liberate them from the clutches of Maya. So, and there in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that an acharya will work out ways to transform people into devotees. So that is actually the symptom of an acharya. So we can see all the previous acharyas in a line. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada and many other advanced devotees, they have devised ways and means to get people into Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada says in the purport how Srila Prabhupada was criticized for the intermingling of men and women. But he says the social custom in Kali Yuga is such that you cannot avoid intermingling between men and women. Therefore he decided to engage both men and women together in preaching the gospel of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we see that traditionally women don't stay in the temple. There is no Brahmacharini ashram. But Srila Prabhupada introduced that to give them shelter and so they can preach Krishna consciousness. So according to the time, place and circumstance, an acharya will devise means to bring people into Krishna consciousness. Though at the time they might be criticized also. So sometimes even devotees cannot understand why an advanced devotee is acting in a certain kind of way. You know, this strategy doesn't make any sense. You know, Krishna consciousness is supposed to be like this, a very stereotyped way. But the advanced devotees, they can actually work out the ways and means to attract people. So that Krishna is also doing by showing the universal form. And also, so this is an aspect of Krishna's mercy. And Arjun, he was granted divine vision to see the universal form of the Lord. So Krishna told him, you cannot see the universal form with your ordinary eyes. You need divine vision. But we see, for anything, we need the mercy of the Lord. As Krishna says, Matta Smritir Jnanam Apohanam Cha. From me comes Matta, remembrance, Jnanam, knowledge, Apohanam, forgetfulness. From me comes remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness. So even in order to remember Krishna, we need Krishna's mercy. So even in order to forget Krishna, we need Krishna's mercy. You cannot forget Krishna unless Krishna covers us over by his illusory potency. Otherwise there is no hope. So we desire to forget Krishna, therefore Krishna has put us in the material world and covered us over. So Krishna's illusory potency works in two ways. It throws us in the ocean of material existence and then it covers us over. And any attempts to come out of the illusory energy, the illusory energy tries to cover that. It is like you're trying to come out and you're being pulled down. So the illusory energy works in two ways. So therefore, Arjun was given this special vision by which he could have a snapshot of the universal form in one place. So as devotees, this is not our process of worshipping the universal form. Why? As Keshava Prabhu was mentioning yesterday, because you cannot exhibit your love for the Virat Rupa. It's not possible. He said, you know, you can't make a garland big enough for the Virat Rupa. Or, you know, you can't cook an offering for the Virat Rupa. You can't dress the Virat Rupa. You can't do aarti for the Virat Rupa. Because it's so huge, it's spread over the entire planetary system. From Patal to, you know, to the top. So therefore, devotees are not interested because there is no reciprocation. You cannot show your love. And in fact, when Arjun saw the Virat Rupa, he was actually struck with wonder. Momentarily he was struck with wonder and fear. And though Arjun is eternally related to Krishna in the humor of friendship, but for the time, at that point of time, it changed to wonder and astonishment and fear. And he was very, very fearful. He wanted to see the four-armed form of Krishna and then the two-armed form of Krishna. So, but then we might think, you know, what's there for us, then why is the universal form being described in the Srimad Bhagavatam? It's not only in the 12th canto, it's throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's there in the 2nd canto, few times, and in the 3rd canto, every now and then it pops up. So, what's the relevance for us? So, we actually, as devotees, we need to understand Krishna's energies and glories and his opulences. And devotees actually take pleasure in hearing anything about Krishna. And we see in the 10th chapter, Arjun, though he understood that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he said, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, that I know you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Abode, and even great Acharyas have confirmed this, but still I want to know about I want you to describe to me your opulences and glories. And then Krishna only described the ones which are most prominent. So we see that devotees take pleasure in hearing anything about Krishna. So it's not that we should straight away jump to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and to the Rasa Leela. You know, we just want to hear the pastimes of the Lord, which are described in the 10th canto. But we don't want to scrutinizingly study the Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita in understanding the energies and the opulences of Krishna. And if we actually try to understand Krishna's energies and opulences and his glories, then that will actually strengthen our faith in the process of devotional service. So it is said, on the American note it says, in God we trust. But if you ask any American, my dear sir, a woman, what can you tell me about God? No one can say anything. So therefore they cannot have firm faith in the Supreme Lord. I was watching a video yesterday in which Srila Prabhupada was being questioned by a reporter, and the reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, I wish Mahatma Prabhu was here, because he'll always ask this question, what do you understand by Krishna consciousness? How do you define Krishna consciousness? And that reporter asked the very same question, what is Krishna consciousness? And Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is thinking about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, serving Krishna, dancing for Krishna in that way, the 9 processes of devotional service. And then Srila Prabhupada went on to say, and then she asked the question, what is Christ consciousness and what is Krishna consciousness? Is there any difference? And Srila Prabhupada said, because you don't understand God, therefore you don't really understand what it means by Christ consciousness. So in order to understand God, we need to understand the Absolute Truth in its entirety. So the Absolute Truth includes his energies, his parts and parcels, his personal expansions, his opulences. We need to understand all these things. Then actually our faith in Krishna will be strong. Otherwise it is based more or less on sentiment. So if we see in India, many people know the pastimes of the Lord. Everyone knows the Ramayana, even right from childhood, isn't it? We were taught the pastimes of the Lord, Sudama Vipra, and we just take them to be mere historical events, or it's a mythology, because we don't understand the science of the Absolute Truth. So therefore it's very, very important that we, and Srila Prabhupada says, when one understands the opulences of Krishna, one will have no choice but to surrender to Krishna and become fixed in devotional service. Because if we truly understand what Krishna's position is, and we are insignificant as part and parcel, then naturally we'll surrender to Krishna. Because we'll understand that we are dependent upon Krishna for everything, and it is our duty to serve Krishna. So therefore it is said that first one should study the first 9 cantos very seriously, very scrutinizingly. In fact, it is said that unless one is free from sex life, one should not proceed further from the 2nd canto. So therefore we need to study very scrutinizingly, and then we can approach the pastimes of the Lord. And Srila Baldev Vidyabhushan, he also mentions in his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita of the 10th chapter, the last verse, he says, from Krishna's potent energy, even the powerful sun gets its power, and by Krishna's partial expansion, the whole world is maintained. Therefore, Krishna is worshipable. So which again proves the point, how we need to understand Krishna's opulences before, so we can understand how is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see that Srimad Bhagavatam has 10 topics in, Srimad Bhagavatam describes 10 topics in detail, beginning from creation, sub-creation, maintenance, protection, the creative impetus, liberation, how the cosmic manifestation is annihilated, and ultimately Krishna himself, the Ashraya, the Samam Bonam. So we need to understand the absolute truth, the Tatma, in great detail. Then that will actually make our faith in Krishna very strong. And we won't be bewildered by when we are faced with opposing arguments. Because then that is the symptom of a Kanishtha Adhikari, where their faith is very weak because due to lack of knowledge. And they can be easily swayed away by opposing arguments. But for us, the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is recommended. And as was being mentioned yesterday, Sadhana Bhakti is of two types. There is Vaidhi and there is Raganuga. So Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti means rules and regulations and injunctions. So injunction means it's an order. You have to do it. You don't have a choice. And why is there Sadhana? Sadhana Bhakti is there to cure, as Prabhupada says in Nectar Devotion, because the living entity is situated in an abnormal condition of madness. Because we are situated in this abnormal condition of madness, therefore, to cure that disease of madness, we need to follow the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. So, if somebody reads this, they will be quite offended that we are actually mad. We are more or less mad. So, what is the madness? We are totally being smashed by the illusory energy, by the threefold miseries, by birth, death, old age and disease, and still we are thinking it's fine, there's nothing wrong. So this process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti actually brings the living entity to its normal position, to sanity. And when we are sick, we very enthusiastically go to a doctor, isn't it? When we are sick, you know, you have a bad cold, or you have broken your leg, or you have cancer or whatever, you know, we immediately run to the doctor and very eagerly and enthusiastically say, give me the medicine, I want to be cured, and I'll follow all the rules and regulations and the injunctions. You know, I'll go on a diet, I'll fast, I won't eat this, I won't eat that, I won't even put salt in the food. So we very enthusiastically accept the Vaidhi Bhakti to get cured of the disease. So similarly, because we are materially infected, this process of Sadhana Bhakti is there to bring us to sanity. And this actually gives us clarity in life. By following the process of devotional service, it actually brings one minimum to the mode of goodness, and it gives us clarity. Because when we are in the modes of passion and ignorance, we cannot actually see what is happening around us, because we are bombarded by so many desires and hankerings and lamentations. So we cannot actually see what's going on. But when we start practicing Krishna consciousness, we actually begin to see what's the reality. And generally, in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we are performing it out of fear, out of duty and obligation. We might think, okay, I'll come to Mangal Aarti, because if I don't come, I'll be in trouble. The ashram leader will be angry with me, so I have to make it a minimum of what it says in the book, 5 Mangal Aartis, and the other 2 I'll sleep in. Because that's the bare minimum I have to do, otherwise I'll be kicked out of the ashram. Or if I don't come to Mangal Aarti, then all the devotees will be talking about me, you know. He doesn't come for Mangal Aarti, just comes for prasadam, or doesn't follow the process. Or I'll have a bad reputation. Or my Guru Maharaj will not be pleased with me if I don't come. I'm not following the orders. Or I'll follow the regulative principles, because I've taken initiation, I've made a commitment in front of the sacred fire, in front of the Vaishnavas, in front of the Devi, in front of my Guru, therefore I'll follow. So this is nice to follow out of duty, because, and eventually, as was being mentioned yesterday, it should lead to attachment. So we should be longing for that day when we'll enthusiastically jump out of bed and want to do Mangal Aarti and serve the Lord. So we should be praying so that that day comes. One day that day will come when we enthusiastically do it. Sometimes we do it, we're very enthusiastic, and then next moment we are like depressed. We are down. We're not feeling any enthusiasm, and then devotees have to encourage us, you know, come on Prabhu. This, you know, do your service, it's good for you. What else will you do if you're not doing your service? So in this way, we go through up, the graph goes like this. The wave goes like this in a wavelength. So, but eventually we want to go like this. And by following this process, and sadhana bhakti actually places us in a status as a spirit soul, right from the beginning. So right from the beginning, we are hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, preaching about Krishna, and doing devotional service. This is what we are meant to do in our perfectional stage. And we are doing that right from the beginning. That's the beauty of devotional service. And the whole idea is to somehow or other fix our mind on Krishna. So therefore, we are not simply interested in the rules and regulations of devotional service. So we are not just performing the rules and regulations just for the sake of them. But the whole idea is to somehow or other to please Krishna by our service. So I'll just stop here and see if it's 8:30. Any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
I'm just surprised that you say that initiated devotees are doing it out of a sense of duty, but not initiated. I'm surprised they're not doing it just out of love for Krishna. I mean,
yeah, that's the
hard. If you're at that stage, you still haven't fallen deeply in love with a little blue boy.
Well, initiation means to initiate. Initiation is the beginning. Yeah. So it's not the end, you know. Of course, it goes on.
So you always have to begin, more or less, no matter how far advanced you are, you still have to begin. Prabhupada still have to begin, because they're so far.
Yeah, a real devotee will always consider himself to be very lowly and fallen. And even we see Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, you know, I'm as fallen as the worms in the stool. So, you know, we might say that, but we might not mean that. They actually mean it. So but he's so advanced. But actually, when we start performing devotional service, we get initiated. This gradually goes away. This duty consciousness. It's a gradual thing. Doesn't go away overnight. So we might start to develop some attachment for the process, but still we are doing it out of duty. But when we reach the stage of Raganuga Bhakti, then one is actually doing out of spontaneous love. There's no fear involved. But for us, we are doing it. The underlying motivation is fear, if we deeply think about it. This is what the Shastra is there in the Nectar of Devotion. It's duty, consciousness. From duty arises love. Maybe you're beyond that, but you know. But for most devotees, Yeah. Think about it deeply. Think deeply. We're doing it out of duty. It's not out of attachment. Some days we might be very fired up, but other days we are down, you know, we're not so fired up. Because we are situated in the modes of nature. Anything else? Yes, Prabhuji.
I just want to bring in a point in this verse. See, in this verse, you know, very clearly states, you know, the Lord's teachers, yet the Maya Vadi, you know, they claim that the Lord is impersonal. So perhaps we should show this verse to
them. You can show this verse, still they'll say it's impersonal. They'll come up with some argument. Yeah, we see there are so many commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, though it's so clearly said. They actually write commentaries on these books and they say Krishna is impersonal. Of course they have seen his verses. It's not that they haven't seen them. They're writing commentaries on these, on the Shastra. And they're saying that he's impersonal. So impersonalism is something which is very, it's very deep rooted within all of us. It's even within us. Though we theoretically accept Krishna as personal, but it is manifest through our activities and dealings. So we can be doing aarti, but you know, or we can be dressing the deities, but might not be even conscious is doing it mechanically. It's just called impersonalism. But it's a gradual process. At least we have accepted in theory, and we are working on it. So it's work in progress. Anything else? Okay. Ramsat Shimon Bhagavatam Ki Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki.